welcome to Hot Weekly.
Everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. Happy Monday once again, everyone. Hope that you are doing well. Yeah. This week's episode may be going live a little late. I have a doctor's appointment right at the time we usually publish.
Later, early. It depends on how
productive it depends.
You are.
We'll figure it out. It's going to go out at a time tomorrow, or for us tomorrow, for them on Monday. But we don't know exactly when. That's what we're saying. So be patient with us. But yes, you can stay apprised of that and other details about this podcast at our website at hauntweekly.com. We are Haunt Weekly on Twitter and Facebook. tinyurl.com/hauntweekly takes you to our YouTube channel where you may listen to all of our previous episodes. And also, as always, find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, any place that finer podcasts are distributed. So yes, we are back once again this week to discuss something that may seem a bit basic, but a lot of people in the haunt industry who have not actually done this may not know everything that goes into it.
Right. Yeah, we touched on it way, way, way back
in
episode nine. Talking about distract and startles in that episode.
Yes.
But this week,
We're actually going through the process through which we come up with and build here everything from the idea all the way to the final implementation and testing.
Right.
Basically, the entirety of the process for us. It's going to be a bit of a doozy. But first things first, as usual, we do conference reminders. You are the oddball, so please do the honors of kicking us off.
All right. August 5th through the 6th, it is Scare LA in Los Angeles, California at the Los Angeles Convention Center in the West Halls. Features Scary Wood, a 60,000 square foot area of mini haunts. Also features Float and It-themed cinematic VR experience.
It rolls right off the tongue. It really does.
It does. A film festival and a costume ball, ScareLA.com.
All right. After that, Halloween and Haunt Fest is scheduled for August 16th through the 19th in Mesquite, Texas, which is just outside of Dallas at the Mesquite Convention Center. We'll feature a Haunters Mixer and Zombie Paintball Hunt, Costume Ball, and more. We'll be touring Dark Hour Haunted House, the Parker House, Fear Phobia, and more. Learn all the details at HalloweenandHaunt.com. We have a little bit more about that in just a minute, so stay tuned.
Yeah. August 18th, Haunters Barbecue in Jackson, New Jersey. It is hosted by the Jersey Devil Haunted Experience. Tickets are just $15 in advance. Find out all about what's going to be going on at the JerseyDevilHalloween.com.
All right, August 24th through the 26th in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's Mask Fest. That's Mask Dash Fest. It's the top official title, don't ask me, at the JW Marriott in Indianapolis. Features mask makers and makeup artists of all stripes, including Tom Savini. Maskfest.com, all one word there, for more details.
All right. Then, September 14th through the 16th, it's Scarefest, the rebirth.
Maskfest to Scarefest.
Exactly. We're going festing. It's going to be in Lexington, Kentucky. Jesus Christ. Lexington Convention Center. Guests include Cassandra Peters, a.k.a. Elvira, Joe Bob Briggs, Monster Vision, and Sid Haig, Captain Spaulding. TheScareFest.com. I almost left off the "the." It's important.
Yeah, it's where the domain it is. All right, and two new additions to this, because basically we've now hit the point where that's the last conference before haunt season.
Right.
Oh, excuse me. And now we're hitting the ones that come after haunt season, immediately after. So, November 9th and 10th in Champaign, Illinois, Dark History and Horror Con at the Garden Hotel Urbana. Tickets are just $20 for the weekend or $10 per day. Includes a film festival. Other details to be announced at dhhcon.com.
All right. November 9th and 10th, it's going to be Legendary Haunt Tour in Salt Lake City, Utah. It'll be at the Holiday Inn Express. We'll be touring Nightmare on 13th and Fear Factory, among others. Legendary Haunt Tour with 2Ts.com.
I am going to be excited to see the other haunts that they announce on this. Salt Lake City is an area ripe for this kind of tour.
Right.
As we found out from our friend Kyle.
Yes.
Who did some scare acting in that area and just impressed upon us how bananas the haunted attraction industry is in that area.
Yeah.
I was kind of blown away and a little confused.
That may be a future visit place.
Yeah, indeed. We are putting it somewhere on the list of places we may visit.
Probably not at the top, because there's a couple of others that are
higher up.
But yeah, definitely on there.
All right. Well, before we kick off our topic of the week, a quick update on Halloween and HauntFest. Last week, we, of course, reported on the very tragic and very untimely passing of Stephen Colberg. I can never say his name right, no matter how hard I try. Stephen Colberg. The producer, the head, the spirit, everything behind the conference. At that time, the team was very confident about pushing forward and continuing with his vision.
Right.
Post this week, not from official channels, seemed to indicate things are a little bit more in doubt as to the future of the conference.
Right.
We have not heard anything related to this year's event yet.
Yes.
But here's the thing. We're kindly asking everyone to please, you know, show your respects to the staff on this. They are not only having to deal with the stresses of trying to put together an event during the last few weeks of it, but also they're dealing with the loss of a very, very good friend. We will listen for updates on official channels. I encourage you to do the same.
Yes.
And if we hear anything from official channels, like I said, we'll let you know. But the main post that they were making was that, hey, we're crazy right now. Please, you know, leave us alone. Lots up in the air and we don't have answers. So please join us in waiting for the official channels.
Yes.
And if you have tickets to Halloween and Haunt Fest, just stay tuned.
Yep.
That's all I can say. Yeah. Please be patient. All right. So this brings us to our topic of the week, how we design scares.
Right.
Now, we're pretty lucky guy and gal.
Yeah.
Well, guys is kind of unisex in that context.
We're just pretty lucky.
We're pretty lucky.
In this respect.
In this one respect. Because we have a small enough haunt
that
we're able to take pretty tight control of this.
Right.
One of the things we're really able to do with the size and the scope we have is hone in and make sure that, you know, these 2 to 3 minutes in the haunt are the most memorable they can be.
Yeah.
And that everything flows and works together in a very specific way.
Yeah, and I do think that large haunts also have someone that is in charge of the entire vision.
Yeah, they do.
Because we've talked to them. And they keep this stuff in check, too. It's not just us.
Well, no.
We're lucky because it's easier because we're small.
and that's just it. It's easier for us to do that.
Yeah.
And basically, we normally don't have to you know, turn to people, you know, basically we don't have a huge team of people to run and to keep in check on this. It's usually just the two of us.
Right.
Which makes it very, very easy to keep the stuff in the flow and keep a vision going.
It does.
But that is the downside of having such a small haunt and trying to be so aggressive is that everything has to fit perfectly.
Yes.
If we were a much larger haunt, we would incorporate break zones, we would have separations.
Right.
We don't have that luxury with our space.
Right. And so, because we are a small haunt, and we have so many volunteers that work with us, occasionally they bring ideas and they want to do something of their own.
Exactly, and that's a great thing.
Yeah.
Because, in particular, in one of our rooms, we never know what the hell we're doing.
Yeah. Yes, it's always a problem.
We have one room. We have never figured out what we're doing in it year to year. I don't know what it is. That room is just cursed.
Yeah. Well, and it seems that room moves, but
well, the past 3 years with the current layout, it's been the same room.
It has, yeah. You're completely correct on that.
It's been the same goddamn room.
Yeah.
And it's the one right before the end for us, basically. It's always the problem child. But anyways, so yeah, we like getting ideas that come from outside sources. We like getting input. But one of the problems is whenever we get an idea for a scare, we immediately start going down this really long process that we're about to describe to you in grave detail.
Right.
And a lot of people who suggest ideas, and this includes not just our actors, but people who go through the haunt, right. other haunters, just everybody that tries to talk to us about a scare, don't always understand the process.
Right. Or everything that goes into creating an effective scare. Yeah.
And an effective scare that eventually can be used and will work once it's in place.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's part of the problem. And that's, I don't want to say it's been a frustration because I still love getting the ideas. I love the input.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, I'm not saying that we don't love getting help.
No.
We absolutely do, but.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that we will do it to each other too.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's been a few times where I've seen something and I've said, oh, I want to build that. And then I send you on a goose chase of how to build it. And then occasionally, it hasn't happened in a while, but you'll say, you know what? I just want a wall that completely disappears. And well, then I got to get out the drawing board and figure it out.
But we made that one work.
We did. No, we made it work, but it was definitely a team effort.
Yeah, that was. But yeah, so we've hit roadblocks in trying to work with others and with ourselves on these things.
Right.
So this is our way of writing out our entire process, so we kind of know when ideas go sideways and the order of operations to think about them.
Yeah.
And this helps us communicate with each other and anyone who might be providing input.
Exactly.
I think that's what this episode's really about. It's as much for us as it is for you guys.
Yeah.
In fact, it may be significantly more for us, for being honest.
Yeah, because I've had to write some of these out this week for someone. So.
Yeah, because we're in the middle of scare build and scare design right now. So this is a topic that's been coming up a lot in the house.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So yeah, this is our basic approach. And what we're going to do is it's like a 6-step process, but in between step one, step two was a long break where we ask a whole bunch of questions and evaluate.
Right.
So, yeah, we're going to be spending a lot of our time in that space. And those are the questions maybe you should jot down.
Yeah.
And really pay attention to.
Yeah. But, or just listen to us again.
Yeah, just listen to us again. Put it on a repeat while you sleep.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll absorb it.
I'm sure you'll get it that way. But anyways, no, the first step is always the idea.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, and this is sort of blends into the haunt design component of it a little bit, and like the haunt layout component of it, because it's usually done somehow in conjunction with the room.
Yes.
Like we say, we have a haunt theme this year of nightmares.
Right.
We come, we write out a big list of nightmares, and we look up and Google what are people's top fears and phobias, most common nightmares. We rewatch the Metallica's Inner Sandman video again. We do all this stuff to try to find out, you know, the things people have nightmares about. And like, okay, we have to have like a classroom scene because that's a recurring theme.
Right.
We have to have a doctor's office scene because apparently everyone has fears of doctor's offices.
Yeah.
And we're doing things like that. So we know we want these particular rooms.
Right.
And then it's okay, well, we're doing this room. What scare goes well in with that?
Right. And we've actually scrapped a room this year and the theme of nightmares turned it to terrors.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, New Orleans Nightmare House.
Yeah. Thank you for that. But we actually scrapped one because one of the scenes we wanted to do and one of the top fears that people have is drowning.
Yeah.
But in New Orleans, drowning's a trigger.
Yeah. That's a particularly nasty issue, especially for the people who were here during Hurricane Katrina.
Right.
And that may just be a little bit too much.
Yeah, and because
we're still too close to that, I think.
We are, and because of where I work, I hear a lot of fears from kids, specifically about big storms and drowning. So we don't want to play with that.
No. That just seems cruel. But yeah, so when we come up with the ideas for the rooms and like the themes we want,
right.
we start thinking about the scares. Now, sometimes we have come up with ideas for scares,
right.
and then gone backwards and made a theme for it that fit.
Yeah.
That's not to say that's the only way it happens.
Yeah, that's not the usual way it happens. Usually, if we come up with a scare, we go, okay, what room does that most make sense in?
Yeah.
Because usually we start with a story.
Yeah.
And the backstory.
Yeah. But there have been times we've had like a scare that's, especially one that's been pre-made.
Yeah.
And we want to reuse it because that's laziness.
It is. It's laziness.
I'm sorry, it's efficiency.
Yeah. Well, and it worked.
Yeah.
And we can use something until the ground so it stops working.
Yeah.
And or we see it everywhere.
Yeah.
Because if we see it everywhere, we don't want to use it.
But yeah, so basically, you know, if we have something that is working and is already made, then we may try to find a theme for that. But
right.
Bottom line is usually the idea for the room comes first, and then we try to find a scare that comes to it.
Yep.
But yeah, so the major sources of inspirations for scares, things that we've done in previous years that have worked,
yep.
Or maybe came close to working but could work with minor tweaks.
Yeah. Or it could be more effective if we think of something, a way to make it even better.
Yeah. Things like that. And those are really, really great if they're already built.
Yeah.
And if all we have to do is move them,
yeah.
It's super handy and super convenient.
Yeah, and there are some scares that we've had that have worked brilliantly in one place and completely flopped when we moved it.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Absolutely. We find inspiration at other haunts we visit, obviously.
Yeah.
Conferences we go to, things mm-hmm. we, you know, see there. Horror movies, YouTube videos. I'll say this. I love watching YouTube videos of other prop builders and the other haunters making things or
right.
showing off what they're doing. Because sometimes we'll see things go, okay, that's really cool. We can't do that. But here's why the scare works. And we can incorporate that element here.
Right, exactly. Or we'll see something and we'll say, okay, that's great. How can we make it our own or improve upon it for our use?
Yeah. Or, you know, if we can't make it because it's too complicated or too
expensive
or whatever.
Do we have the skills for this? I don't think we have the skills
But we
for
might
this.
Have a way to incorporate what made the scare work.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And, of course, heavy drinking is always a good option for finding or coming up with scares.
Yeah.
No, we joke, but I would say we've done a significant amount of our planning of scares or the idea generation phase while either drinking coffee or beer. One or the other.
Yeah, there was that one time with zombies that we planned the whole haunt and.
And zombies are, should clarify, zombie is a coffee drink that is served prominently here in New Orleans.
So strong, it'll wake the dead.
Or apparently help you design a haunt in roughly 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. But basically, step one is to get the idea. And then this idea, before we go anywhere with it,
yep.
has to pass rigor.
Yes.
And there is a lot of rigor here.
Mm-hmm.
The first question, and this is where we get into the series of questions, is it safe?
I don't know. Is it?
Good question. Yes. Is it safe? Is it a safe idea? We have come up with a lot of really scary ideas that were probably scary because they might actually kill or maim a customer.
Or an actor. Yeah.
Yes. You know, we have to look at whether it's safe for the customers and it's safe for the actors.
Right.
And then we have to decide, okay, if it's safe when it works well,
mm-hmm.
what can go wrong?
Yeah.
And that's the really, really tough one in some ways.
Because mm-hmm.
you're trying to predict things that are inherently unpredictable.
Yeah. Exactly.
They really are.
Yeah.
And that's just it. This is never a 100% thing.
No.
Like the refrigerator scare we had a few years back.
Yeah.
That was a classic example of, even though we tested, and we'll get to the test phase later on, but the funny one with this one was we had a slam door that opened up, and what happened is it would be stopped by a refrigerator that was jammed open, and we put marbles and glass, so it would rattle like a bitch, even though it was theoretically not hitting it that hard.
Yes, and the glass was, the bottles were...
Epoxied
into...
The trays. They're epoxied into the trays, and we had tested this, you and me, into the ground.
Yeah.
But we weren't the ones operating it that first night.
That was my dad.
Her father, who was significantly stronger than either of us by a pretty wide margin. And he hits that breakaway wall. And, yeah, sure, we epoxied the bottles into the trays. We did not epoxy the trays into the damn door. And so the entire trays just go flying out at our first set of customers, who luckily were our friends.
Yeah.
And were people we knew very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, they loved it and they laughed and were like, holy shit.
They're like, that was awesome.
I'm like,
can we do it again?
No, absolutely not. You cannot do that again. Jesus Christ, you mad bastards.
Yes.
There was projectiles going at your face.
Well, maybe not your face, but.
At you.
Towards you. Not where we wanted them to be, in the door. So. Yeah. So test and test hard. Yeah, and that's the lesson there.
That's coming up later, yes. All right. But the thing about what can go wrong is what you have to remember is that actors and customers don't always do what they're supposed to or what you think they will do.
Right. And customers do act in unpredictable ways, as a lot of us know.
And it's always crazy to me because we have security camera footage of the entire haunt.
Yeah.
And I go through it every year in the weeks after.
Yeah.
And you watch it, it can get a little mundane.
Right.
Because you'll see, okay, drop panel or whatever hits, and boom, and customers flee this way or they jump this way. There's like one or two responses you see constantly.
Yeah.
And like, okay, those are the ones you prepare for. And then there's someone who finds something new.
Yeah.
Who invents a new way to be afraid.
Yes.
A pioneer in feardom, if you will.
Yeah.
And like last year, we had a drop panel, and most customers would get scared and like leap back from it. And then we had a sturdy wall back there that was completely devoid of anything sharp.
Yes, impact walls. Those are important.
Impact walls, concrete screwed, braced, and heavily. They were hunky-dory just fine. They could hit it all day. They weren't going to damage anything. Yeah. Or they just ran forward, or they dashed forward. But one person got scared and ran the reverse direction.
Yeah.
Right into a counter that we had hidden in a non-scare area.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so scared. I'm going to run deeper.
I'm going to run back the way I just came. Because I know that that's safe now, right?
Yeah, exactly. No. But anyway, so yeah, you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And if you do find safety issues, and you pretty much will.
Yeah.
How do you fix them? How do you address them? And can they be fixed cost effectively?
Right.
Can you set up barriers to keep customers from getting too close to a scare? That was one we did, one we do a fair amount of.
Yeah.
Can you put hard stoppers on things to keep them from flying out too far? Things like that. But it's got to be cost effective.
Right. And you also have to keep in mind your setting. Because if you scare someone hard, you don't want people running and hitting walls with sharp things on them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Because they will.
But then comes the really difficult question in all this. Once you make it safe, once it's safe, does it get in the way of the scare?
Yeah.
This might seem weird because it's more important that it be safe than effective.
Right.
But if making it safe revokes its effectiveness,
yeah,
then it's probably not a good scare.
Yeah.
If it has to be, actually endangering the human bodies in order to be scary, then it's probably not something you want to hang on to.
Right.
All in all, this is the number one thing to consider when you come up with an idea for a new scare. It's got to be the first thing you think about.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get past it'd be so cool if we had, dudes bungee jumping off the roof. And once you get past that part of it, you have to go, okay, is it safe?
Yeah.
And then work from there.
Yeah.
You have to make it safe.
Is it still scary?
And we have buzzkilled so many of our own ideas over safety.
Yeah.
Because we've had some pretty incredible ideas that would have very genuinely been scary.
Right.
But we had no practical means of making it safe.
Right.
I remember one year we talked about we wanted to have a light rain mist on the people as they went through a room, and we had could build a shaker box or something,
or have the actor squirt
water
with a little spray.
But we have nothing but a hard concrete floor, and that's perfectly fine the first hour or so, but once that water builds up, you've got a slip hazard and there's just no good way to get rid of it.
Right.
Things like that, awesome ideas that would have been very effective and very cool, passed on completely.
Yeah.
Question two. Is it comfortable? This is a surprisingly rarely thought of question in some haunts.
Right.
I have been blown away in the haunts I've acted in and how many scares they put in that, while maybe safe for customers, weren't safe for actors in some cases. Separate issue.
Yeah.
But even if they were safe for actors, were not comfortable.
Right.
Actors have to operate the scare for 3 to 4 hours, depending on how long you're open, or even longer, possibly.
Right.
With minimal breaks.
Yeah.
And if they can't do it, it's not worthwhile. If they have to be out of pocket, you know, 15 minutes out of every hour, and you can't sub anyone in easily, it's just not worth it.
Right.
Basically, you want your actors to be comfortable, because uncomfortable actors are unhappy actors. Unhappy actors don't return.
Exactly. We've talked about actor care yes. before, so.
Yeah, and one thing to remember with this, and this is a problem we've run into a few times, mm-hmm. is what's comfortable for you or me or for Crystal may not be comfortable for the person operating in them.
Right.
And we've run into this a few times, especially when dealing with actors of different body sizes and body types than us.
Right.
I'm fairly tall, for example.
Yeah.
So I can operate a scare, like the 5 foot to 6 foot height, pretty easily, mm-hmm. pretty comfortably. If you're 5 foot, that means reaching over your damn head.
Yeah.
It's not going to be nearly as comfortable.
Right.
So lifting things above shoulder height, for example, is not always a good, is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. It actually can hurt your shoulders doing that repeatedly.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got to think about those things, and you've got to think about, well, this scare may need to be operated by a short person, or a tiny person, or a big person, or whatever. So also be thinking about who and what body type will be operating that scare. And also consider any potential issues your actors may have, such as bad knees, bad shoulders, so on and so forth.
Right. Do they have trouble climbing?
Exactly.
Are they prone to vertigo? We've got several actors who are sensitive to light, so we can't put them in. We don't use strobes usually anyway, yeah. but we definitely can't put those actors in any place with a blinking light because they will make themselves sick.
We have siren lights, for example.
Yeah, they will
make those can be problematic.
Sick. Yeah. So,
In that same vein, a related question, is there an easy in and out for breaks?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh boy, we've worked in haunts where that was not the case.
Well, and we've built a couple of scares
yeah.
where we didn't think it through quite as much as we should have.
Yeah.
The first iteration of the hole in the wall
yeah.
that was built.
Well, we didn't consider different body types on that one either.
Oh, no, not the first iteration, because I was like, okay, we're going to do this. I'm going to be the one to do it because I know it's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it was.
And you could take that load onto yeah, yourself. You exactly. were fine doing it for you.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask somebody else to do it.
But then someone else ended up doing it.
They volunteered.
They volunteered and they wanted it. They actually,
yep.
Because it was a very cool scare.
It was.
They wanted it. And yeah, the in and out of them was not easy.
No.
The second iteration was much easier. We built ladders and crap into it.
Yeah, it was much easier, but much less comfortable.
Yeah.
Even though it was better built.
We might be bringing it back, but we got to revamp it for comfort.
Yeah.
But yeah, be thinking about the in and out, too, while you're at it. If you cannot trivially get out of the scare, it probably isn't a good one. You're going to have, at the very least, there's going to be enforced breaks during the night. And you may also have breaks between customers.
Right, and you also have to think about safety for this reason also, because if you have a fire or something, that actor has to be able to get out of there quickly.
Yeah, exactly. All right, question three.
Three.
How long does it take to reset?
Yeah.
Our general rule is anything that takes longer than 10 seconds is a no-go. We prefer 5, actually.
Yeah, we do. Because
10 is the absolute max we'll consider.
Right. We know that lots of people go for like 3. But, you know.
Well, the nature of our haunts, we only have one group in at a time.
Right.
We can afford, if we had multiple groups, 3 would be. 3 yeah. would be our ideal, 5 would be our max.
Yeah.
But since we only have one group at a time, a scare at the end can still be resetting while the group begins in the front.
Right.
Especially if that actor's not doing anything at the beginning.
Yeah.
So, there's a little more give there than mm-hmm. there would normally be. But yeah, it's got to be measured in short seconds, and it has to be reset just by the person operating the scare.
Right.
If someone else in that room or someone else from another room has to come over and help them, no go. We learned that lesson with a guillotine.
Yes, my dad showed up with a giant metal guillotine and said, here you go.
By the way, we should note he showed up with a guillotine unasked.
Yeah.
We had not requested a guillotine. We had never even really mentioned the word guillotine to him.
Nope.
But no, he and his welding buddies, was that what he was?
It was just him that built it. Yeah.
He welded up a metal guillotine that fit inside a standard panel.
Yeah.
And just brought it.
Yeah.
out of nowhere, showed up one day.
Yeah.
You got a guillotine.
Like 4 days before opening. Here you go.
The hell we don't do this.
Well, and that goes back to the safety thing, because yeah, it's cool and scary, but how do we make it safe? And even though we came up with a way that we could use it that one year, I don't think that our solution was as safe as it could have been.
No, it was definitely not.
Yeah.
And honestly, we probably should not have done that anyway.
Yeah.
But the point of the matter is that the reset on that was a pain because the guillotine blade was so heavy.
Right.
It took two of our strongest actors, him and I think Melvin, wasn't it?
Probably, yeah.
They're doing the reset on it. And it took forever, even with the two strongest people we had.
Yeah, luckily we weren't at capacity at that point. We were still growing. If
that happened like last year or the year before, when we were pretty much crushing capacity, especially on Halloween night.
Yeah.
We'd have been hosed. We would have
had to
skip that scare.
Exactly.
Had to cut it out because we just can't do it.
No.
Yeah. So, thinking about reset is incredibly important.
Yep.
And also, remember, it has to be reset between 100 and 200 times in a night, on average.
Well,
if you're at capacity.
Or more, if you have more customers.
If you go longer, yeah. But be thinking in hundreds of times.
Hundreds to thousands. Because the big haunts are going to think about thousands of times.
But yeah, is it too physically demanding?
Yeah. Can your actor reset it trivially? Is it done automatically? How are you doing it?
Yeah. Are you assisting it in some way?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are tough things to think about, I admit, but they are very, very important. Yeah. Because, like I said, what may be super easy the first dozen times or 100 times can get very difficult as the night goes on.
Yeah. Well, once again, going back to Dad's building techniques, if I had had to operate the drop ceiling, because once again, that was a scare that I didn't feel comfortable handing to another actor, but it was a really heavy piece of wood that you had to hold in the up position until customers got under it and then let drop.
Yeah.
If I had to do that last season at capacity, it wouldn't have gotten done.
No, we would have had to think of another way to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, Dad doesn't come down too scared.
No.
To build.
There's a lesson learned here about your dad and building scares.
Yes. Okay. Worked beautifully, but yeah.
Question 4.
Yeah.
Can we build it cheaply?
Yes.
This is a big one for us. We are big believers in what we call 2x4 technology. Codenamed Kids Next Door is the show that came from. If you've never seen it, definitely check it out. But yeah, 2x4 technology, if we can't build it with stuff from Home Depot, we probably aren't going to want to mess with it.
Yeah.
I mean, our tools and experience with carpentry, we do have some metal workers on the team, including your dad.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably about 90%+ of what we do is going to be carpentry based.
Right.
And that being said, our best and longest lasting scares have been the simplest ones that stayed really within our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. We know how to build a really good drop panel.
Yeah.
We know.
Unless we try to put a window in it.
unless we fuck it up.
Yeah.
You know, unless we take a very simple, beautiful idea and fuck it up. Yes. That's, as long as we don't do that, we're good. Like I said, it's about staying within the comfort zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, for us, we tend to use the yard display for when we want to push and do things more further afield for us.
Right.
And some of those have worked out really, really good. Like the Rare Exports box was a little bit far afield for us at the time.
Yeah.
That's held up remarkably well. The Ringmaster had some issues, but held up fine.
I think we finally got a system for making him, you know, 10 feet tall and not blow over in New Orleans wind. In October.
Yeah, that's the problem with New Orleans. Fall is the windy season in New Orleans. And so anything you build above like 5 feet is going to get heavily impacted by wind.
Yep.
And that's a lesson that we didn't learn until we started building significant amount of things above 5 feet.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've had to learn that one. But yeah. So yeah, can we build it cheaply and can we build it with what we know and what we have available to us and our team?
And will it last the season and into another season?
Yeah, cheaply includes, longevity of it.
Exactly. Is it strong?
Yeah, we might be willing to spend a few $100s on something that we know will last, you know, 5-10 seasons.
Right.
And will be reused year after year after year.
Yeah.
If this is something that is just for this season, either because of the theme or because of whatever, or if it just, it isn't going to make it.
Yeah.
We're not going to spend nearly that amount.
Right.
Yeah, that's a cost factor right there.
It is.
Okay. So with all those questions answered, we move on to step two.
Yay!
If it's past all this, if it seems like it can work, if it can be safe, it can be effective, and blah, 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 we get to strategy,
mm-hmm.
which is how does the scare work? It's one thing to know what the scare is, if it's a guy crawling on the ceiling, if it's a guy busting his chains or whatever.
No.
How does it actually work? Now, we talked about this part very heavily in episode 9, The Shrek and Startle. Sat down with our friend Kyle
yeah.
to discuss this. Great episode. I go back and check it out. And he actually talks about Utah in that one, if I remember correctly, Salt Lake City. So
I believe so.
Yeah, I believe that was the episode. If not, it's the other one he sat down with and mm-hmm. talked about it extensively. But anyways, basically, we have to figure out how the distract and startle is going to work on this. We're trying to figure out how we're either attracting attention to the scare.
Right.
Because oftentimes the thing we're building is the distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we trying to draw attention to it, or how are we trying to take attention away from it? And a lot of this comes down to lighting, but also to its position in the haunt.
Yeah.
And we try also, while we're thinking about this, we're trying to figure out, you know, how it flows with other scares. Like we said, one scare has to flow into the next.
Right.
We're looking at the scare after it and the scare before it to figure out what the flow is and the direction is. Is this too many attacks from one direction? Is it, and the bigger problem, as you noted, is does it scare backwards?
Yeah. And the other thing is that whenever, so we have two rooms that are pretty much the exit for one and the entrance to the other.
Mm-hmm.
The scares 1 year lined up.
Yeah.
In a line.
Mm-hmm.
Not smart. Because yeah. the people would get scared in the first room and run right past the second scare and never see it.
Yeah. And that actor got really frustrated, understandably and justifiably, I might add.
Yeah.
poor design. So, yeah, where does it fit? And also, like you said, does it scare forward or at least scare to the side?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a believer. I definitely don't believe you should scare backwards.
Right.
But I also don't think you should constantly scare forward.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is, as we've discovered and as I've seen in other haunts, is that creates too much forward momentum.
Yeah.
Customers then start just blowing through your haunt.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which, yeah, that's good for throughput, but it's bad for customer experience. You've got to find a middle ground where you're attacking from different angles and so on and so forth. And, yeah, I mean, every once in a while, it may pay to do a little bit of a scare backwards to slow them down.
Right.
If you're in a portion where they tend to bolt through and you want them to pause and breathe mm-hmm. and see something, a quick startle that pause them in their line mm-hmm. works.
Also, things like closet, dark areas, that also slows customers down. Yeah.
Darkness, my old friend.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So, yeah, basically, though, this part is about trying to figure out how it will work as a scare in the haunt, trying to fit the jigsaw pieces together
right.
to make it the best it can be. And so once we've got that done, we step into the design. And design is probably the part that we are the worst at in many ways. And this is where we actually diagram out the scare, how it's going to be built, how it's going to look. And this part, the first thing to do is always visit where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Measure and remeasure.
Yep.
How many times have we built something, went to drop it off in its place, only to find it's a half inch too big?
Yeah.
You know?
It's happened.
It's happened more than a few times. Consider using CAD for more complex builds. I recommend SketchUp.
Right.
No longer owned by Google, but yeah. it's still amazing software.
Yeah, I know that we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
And the designing.
Still, it's worth it. In fact, I downloaded a new copy of it today. This reminded me I did not have it on my Mac.
Oh, cool.
And from that, we're able to calculate what materials we need. And then we're able to take a look at what we have on hand already. Because we keep a pretty solid supply of scrap material
right.
handy. And some new material, too. And then we can know what we need.
Yeah.
And then we go and we make the purchases.
Exactly.
It's pretty straightforward. Step 4 is the obvious one, to build the scare.
Mm-hmm.
duh.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say about this one. It's pretty obvious. You put screws into wood. You cut wood to the appropriate size. You put screws into wood. Eventually, you get a scare.
You do.
You know, it's the main thing is to try not to waste your supplies.
Yeah.
Be smart about how you do it. Don't try to rush the build.
No.
Especially when we've done builds later, right before we open, and we're in a hurry, we've made mistakes of trying to rush, and has cost us both time and money.
Right.
Because we end up wasting material, then we're unable to finish it with what we have on hand, then we got to go back to Home Depot, or go back to Lowe's, or go back to the Ace, or wherever we're going.
Go online.
And buy the crap, and then we got to get it, and by the time that, we've spent more money that we don't have, probably,
mm-hmm.
and we've lost hours out of a very precious day, probably.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Main thing here is to go slow, be methodical, plan. It's a situation where, in a weird way, going slow means going faster.
Right.
It really, really does. We have found that out. Be very careful. Step 5 is to place scare. Sometimes we build in the room itself,
mm-hmm.
but we do try to avoid that.
Yeah.
Because we have a very nice designated work area that we like being in. It's big, it's fluffy, it's wonderful. Right. And most importantly, it's outside fully.
Yeah.
So that all the sawdust and all the debris and crap doesn't have to be picked up immediately. We can sweep it up later.
Exactly.
It gives us a little more flexibility with that.
Well, and the weather helps here too.
Yeah.
Just wash this away.
Just wait for the rain. then we try to bring it in. Now, with the bringing in part, there's two things to remember. One, timing is important.
Yeah.
We always try to kind of build our haunt back to front. We only have two doors, and they're both on the same side of the building.
Right.
So we do it from back to front. We kind of broke that rule this year a little bit, but the finished front room isn't fully finished, and the result of that, we still have clear path to things.
Right. And the front room was almost done anyway.
Anyway, yeah. So basically, make sure you always have a path to bring large things inside.
Right.
The second is measure your goddamn doorways.
Yeah, exactly. Just do it. Take our advice on this.
I remember, and we were laughing about this because one year we built a very lovely 8-foot by 8-foot. It was not a panel per se, but it was
a frame.
It was a frame, basically.
It was a frame for a falling wall.
Yeah, it was a frame for a falling wall, and we'd actually diagrammed the scare very carefully. We knew exactly how it was going to work, yep. And it did work.
It did.
Everything went without a hitch on it. Other than getting it inside.
Yes.
Because we looked at our door, we looked at what we've done in the past, and we said, oh yeah, we get 8-foot stuff inside that door all the time. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get it in sideways.
Yeah. We get it when it's 8-foot by 4-foot. Look,
there's no sideways right? on a square frame.
8-foot by 8-foot panel. No, there isn't.
So sideways isn't a thing.
Spent like an hour building it, and then had to take it apart to put it together inside the room.
Speaking of losing lots of valuable time, at least we didn't lose any materials on that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This part really should be higher up in our planning process. I've been thinking about
it. Yeah.
But, yeah, the main thing is to get it in place and get it stable.
Mm-hmm.
And then our final step, step 6, testing.
Yeah.
Test the scare to make sure it works. Now, this is the part I cannot emphasize enough. If it's a new build for us, we typically try to test it at least 100 times.
Yeah.
And it may not be 100 times immediately in a row. It may be 20 times in a row here, 20 times there.
Yeah.
But constantly trying different things with it, trying to break it. Really, really hammering on it. Looking for reliability, looking for failure points.
Mm-hmm.
We've had slam walls, for example, where we realized the hinges we'd used were subpar.
Yeah.
But we only found that out after about 50 or so slams.
Yeah.
And we like, oh, look up. Oh, Jesus, those screws are coming out in that hinge.
Exactly.
You know, apparently we need to go buy the super industrial hinges.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like next year we'll probably be rebuilding the frame for the disappearing wall because it's gotten hit so many times that the bottom is fairly shredded at this point.
Yeah.
It'll do this season, but it's not going to survive another one.
Or you may want to put like metal flashing at the bottom of it or something.
Yeah. Something to just... Yeah, you know, prop it up a little bit.
But yeah, I mean, and that's the thing you'll start to see, is you'll start to see the wear points where you're having problems immediately, and you can address them. And what you want to do is make sure those immediate problems are addressed before it ever goes into action. Otherwise, on your opening weekend, you're going to have something break that you just put in, and it's going to cause problems.
Right.
Also, test at safety, obviously. We're strong believers in the crash test. I am the crash test dummy.
Yes. We should really get you a helmet.
Yeah, we should. The rule of the crash test basically is, okay, well, here's the scare, the wall, or whatever. We think someone might run into it at some point. Jonathan, fling your body weight into it as hard as you can.
Yeah.
Ideally with a sizable running start.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I do it and don't get hurt, if I do it a few times and don't get hurt and it doesn't break, mission accomplished.
Exactly.
But obviously, feel for rough edges, screws, anything that might be poking through. One of the things we have our actors do, because we're constantly feeling for these rough edges as we do it.
Right.
But I swear to God, every year we tell the actors, go around your area, feel for any rough screws or pointed bits, make sure there's nothing. They always find them.
Yeah.
They always find them.
There's that little piece of staple that wasn't all the way removed.
Or there's that screw that's poking through that eighth of a quarter inch or whatever.
Yeah.
And we just didn't see it and we painted over it or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's like, how? But I know the feeling because I go and I visit other people's haunts and I'm magnet boy all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
How many times have I gotten called on nails or screws that...
Too many.
I gotta stop eating magnets, man. Apparently it's not a good habit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and obviously test for the safety of operation as you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because when you're operating, when you're doing the testing, you're seeing if there's any point that people could get pinched, have the actors could be pinched, have something drop on their toes.
Right.
Remember the very first drop panel we built?
Yeah.
The very first time I dropped it, I landed right on my toes because I'd forgotten to put in the safety.
Well, no, the very first drop panel, this is again... Mm-hmm. Dad brought it down. He had built it. He brought it down, Big Bertha.
Mm-hmm.
You did that. You tested it. And then we put a kick plate on the back.
Yeah.
Immediately. Because it's like, that's going to crush somebody's toes.
Yeah, I thought we had done most of Big Bertha, though.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, not going to argue. but while you're doing it, you're also testing for comfort. And one of the tips I have found for increasing comfort with anything that's going to be physically operated like this is to make it so that it can be operated multiple ways.
Yeah.
Every drop panel we have, the reset, has multiple handles. It has a center handle, side handle. It has a maddening number of handles on it.
Yeah.
The reason is if it gets uncomfortable to lift it, you know, with handles on the side, it might be easier to lift it with a handle on the top.
Right.
Or a handle in the center, hold it like a shield.
Right.
Basically, you want to give them as many options as you can.
Yeah. Yes, and also, if you have something that is heavier to reset, be sure to put in pulleys to help put it back in place.
And you can even use weights and pulleys, like an elevator system to help with that. That's something we've been experimenting more and more and more with. But basically, just try to find alternate ways to operate. It includes operating the scare itself. A breakaway wall that you have to push one way every single time will, A, get boring, but will also get difficult on whatever joints they're using.
Right.
And so, yeah, we're thinking repetitive stress injuries on that. Maybe they can bash it with their shoulders safely. Maybe they can do, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think their hands are doing fine on that one. Yeah. But
the long story short is to make sure that they don't get repetitive motion because it can only work or be reset one way.
Right. Or that it's too tiring to reset it.
Exactly.
Over the long night.
Think about. Those are the things to think about. So, all in all, yeah, that is the process that we go through. Once testing is complete, it's implemented. And never has a scare gone through this process and failed. Uh-huh. Oh, God, I'm full of crap.
Yeah, we knew that.
Woo, that's a lie.
Yeah.
There's been plenty of those.
Yeah.
But that's because at the end of the day, you can't always predict how people are going to react to your scare.
Right.
And we have had scares in our haunt that we would actually torture each other with because they were very effective to us, like some of our drop ceilings and so forth.
Yeah.
In fact, I recall one year we had to put a ban on us or anyone helping us from activating the drop ceiling while we were working.
Right.
Just because it got too distracting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it didn't do well with the haunt because of, I guess, people just weren't looking up enough.
Well, yeah.
And timing was an issue.
Yeah, well, we've had a couple of drop ceilings, and the first one, I really think that it was timing. The actor working it did not have the timing. So when I operated it, it got people. When they operated it, it didn't work as well. But, so yeah, that's something to make sure that your actors have the timing. You either have a way to signal them, or you get them in there testing it enough beforehand to make sure that their timing is down pat.
Yeah. Usually when a scare goes through that and fails, it fails because of either timing issues.
Yeah.
It fails because of positioning issues. We screwed up the strategy part of it.
Right, exactly.
We weren't thinking about the strategy part very clear. Or it failed because we were not able to draw the appropriate amount of attention or non-attention to it for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And that happened a lot with some of the gags higher up because we realized very quickly, especially in our haunt, I don't know if this is true elsewhere, it's very hard to motivate people to look up.
It is.
So we had to be very, very mindful of using those scares from up above. And like I remember like 13th Gate had the guy that pushed the fence over you from above.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that scare began with him saying, "Hey, look up."
Yeah.
"Oh, what? Oh." And then he does it. And yeah. It's a very, you swear to God, that fence is coming right down on your head.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had to say, "Hey, look up." To make it, otherwise I probably would just, "Wee."
Yeah. "Hey, up here."
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, things like that happen still. So, it's not that that's like the 100% guaranteed scare's gonna work. But, it probably guarantees your scare won't kill anyone.
Yeah.
That's good, right?
Yeah. I hope so.
Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for joining us as we make this episode for the actors and the people we work with to explain our process.
Yes.
And instruct them on how we do things ourselves. Maybe some of our protocol was useful to you. Maybe not.
If we have missed any obvious things, please let us know.
By posting angry comments on our Facebook and Twitter.
Or sending us angry messages.
And by either of those. Yes, we are Haunt Weekly on Facebook and Haunt Weekly on Twitter. We are also at hauntweekly.com. Feel free to check us out there. And tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel where you can view this and all, or listen to this and all previous episodes. You can't view the episodes.
Yeah.
There ain't a camera in here. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
View all those listen to all those past episodes at your heart's content. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 139, talking about our scare design process. We will see you guys next week for episode 140, which means we're doing
the news.
See you then.